treacheries of the Space Marines. It should be noted that desertion amongst the ranks of the honored Adeptus Astartes is extremely uncommon. However, much as it pains me to write this, neither is it entirely unheard of. Those who have studied the works of Balthazar de Aubigny and Master Filius Victor will speak in hushed whispers of the dark days of the Great Heresy, but much as I hate to put this to the record, this has not been the only occasion when brother has turned upon brother, and the very architects of the glorious Imperium of Man have sought to undo the great work of past noble deeds, and tear down that which they once fought so hard to establish. It has been calculated that there is one Space Marine for each of the million worlds of the Imperium, and that number, though small, is sufficient to protect humanity from the foul schemes of the alien, heretics, and the powers of the warp. But if even only one of those brothers should turn from the light of the Emperor's truth and fall upon his fellows like a thing run mad, how can it be enough? So I say to you, whether you be a student of the Ordos, a ranked interrogator, or a Lord Militant of his Imperial Majesty's blessed Inquisition, be ever watchful of the Primarch's get, the proud warriors of the Adeptus Astartes, for only the Emperor himself is infallible. From the treatise Quis Custodunt Ipsos Angelus Mortis, by Gideon Law, Inquisitor, Ordo Hereticus. He has always known this day would come. One day. The skies of Constantium are the colour of raw meat, the clouds of crimson as fresh blood or hot iron, painted by the fires raging in the old ecclesiarchy quarter of Sirtis City. The great cathedral, reconsecrated to Constantius the Liberator, a glorious edifice to one man's overreaching ambition, the size of an entire city sector, is ablaze. The raw meat sky is streaked black by the trails left by falling drop pods, descending Thunderhawk gunships, and ground-to-air heavy ordnance fire. The atmosphere is thick with the smell of the burning Promethium refineries and the cloying scent of death. He turns to the iconoclast at his side, one of his honour guard. The warrior's gold-edged armour is scuffed and scarred from the battles he has had to endure of late. In some places, the battle plate is so badly marked that the faint glimmers of blue and white can be seen beneath the gold and red-black, an echo of a memory of what the warrior had once been, of whom he had once served. "Brother Maimon," he says, addressing the iconoclast, "tell me, who is that that comes against us now, with sword and flame, with hammer and bolter?" The iconoclast studies the incoming craft, the esoteric systems of his helmet visor locking onto the falling, swooping landing craft. Targeting reticules focus on the chapter markings cast upon the vehicle's atmospheric entry-heated hull plates, magnifying the badges and Adeptus Astartes insignia. The iconoclast sees gunmetal grey crosslets against a black shield. The Liberator himself goes bareheaded, as he has done ever since the glorious day when he earned that honorific and liberated Nova Terra, as the planet was known then, when the people gazed upon the face of their saviour and knew him for the mighty avenging angel he was. The avenging angel he still is.
"Iron Knights, my lord,"
iconoclast Maimon replies, his voice a rumbling growl.
"Iron Knights," the Liberator laughs. "Let us see how their iron might fares against the armour of faithfulness."
He takes in the shattered walls of the bastion behind him with a weary glance. After 15 years of fighting the Imperium, his defiance and his contempt for the ailing empire of mankind is all he has left. The moment he broke his vows of brotherhood and obedience, he had known, somewhere deep inside of himself, that this day would come. If he had not launched his pogrom against the other worlds of the Veridis subsector, perhaps it might not have come as soon, but it would have come. It had been as inevitable as the wrath of the false emperor. He turns from the breach blasted through the ferrocrete walls of the bastion, A rift 100 metres high, its heat-fused lips like dribbled black wax, and gazes across the lower slopes of his citadel stronghold. Much of Syrtis is ablaze now. The metropolis looks like it did all those years ago when he first liberated this world. Only on that occasion, it was he who had put its populace to the sword and set its streets alight. His gaze is slowly drawn back to the silhouette of the great cathedral, backlit by the firestorm engulfing that region of the city. The stern features of the golden edifice that stands before the broken basilica seem to shift in the flickering light of the flames. One minute the Cyclopean effigy is smiling upon the people of Syrtis, the next it is a furious deity of rage, its face a mask of hatred at the hubris of the invaders, that they should dare deny him that which was his by right, that which he had fought so long and so hard to win, that which he had finally won through great personal sacrifice, the greatest anyone on Constantium had ever had to make. Within the canyon streets of the tenement Habs, within the Tekkenapple-haunted industrial quarter, within the shattered ruins of the Grand Arena, the fighting is at its most intense. The battle lust burns in his blood. He yearns for combat. The stink of physoline and cordite has him panting for action once more. Despite the risks that such an action would bring with it, he wishes to be there, in the thick of things himself. After all, it is the manner in which he has conducted his entire reign. It is how he has raised a battle force that, at its height, conquered entire star systems in his name, plunging the worlds of the Veridus subsector into a new age of darkness. In the armies of the Imperium, he had been a mere sergeant, but free of the shackles of duty, he had risen to become as a god. Worlds shook at the tread of his armored feet. Entire dynasties were toppled at mere mention of his name. It is then that he sees them for the first time, making for the breach, emerging from the clouds of drifting smoke, giving voice to their mewling battle cries, declaring their subjugation to the Golden Throne, a gaggle of soldiers in black and grey fatigues, and ashen flak armour, lasguns held low, bayonets fixed, not a heavy weapon between them. He would laugh, if it wasn't so insulting, that these insects thought that they could challenge him, here, on his world, coming at him like children, armed with wooden swords and shields. He does not need to give the command. Those who follow him know what is expected of them. It is but one thing. The zealous who fight in his name, making the invaders pay for every meter they advance in blood. The enlightened who have witnessed firsthand the fate of those who would challenge his dominion. The iconoclasts, once his brethren, now his bodyguard, who helped shape this world and the fate of a dozen others like it. Just one thing. That is all he asks. The one thing that was denied him in a former life. Loyalty. He leads the charge himself, striding down the scree of shattered walls and through the smoke, resplendent in his gold-chased, blood-black armour, the unutterable names of a thousand unspeakable things picked out in sigils and runes that seem to glow and smoke with molten heat. At his back march his personal bodyguard, his iconoclasts, Maemon and Pius, the most loyal of all his devotees, their armour red, black and gold like his, the eight-pointed star raised from the ceramite of their left shoulder pads where once was displayed an altogether different insignia. Behind them come Cabiel, also known as the Skulltaker, and Gargor Nor, the Slithian, once of the warband of Gargoth the Oppressor, now herald of Constantius, the most faithful of the enlightened, foe-smiter held reverently in his gauntleted fists. Zipping lasbolts spang from ceramite plate that has withstood the slavering attentions of ravenous demon blades, and even the excruciating blades of a degenerate hellbrute some years before. His honour guard do not even break stride. Five demigods against 10 times as many guardsmen. Demigods who made the star realm of man what it was, and who could tear it down and remould it just as easily. The invaders would be as wheat before the reaper's scythe. The weapon in his hand hums with unnatural life. It is an instrument of destruction, a crackling golden blade set within an ebon hilt. It is a weapon that, in his hands, has taken the heads of his enemies by the score. It is a slayer of champions, a killer of kings. It has had other names in ages past, but it answers to only one name now. Ruin. The first guardsman dies with a plaintive prayer to the God Emperor on his bloody lips. It doesn't stop Ruin cleaving him in twain from crown to groin. Then the iconoclasts are upon the guardsman pack, and the broken ground runs red with the blood of mortals. The Liberator's humming blade opens flak armour as readily as it cleaves flesh from bone and boils blood. Something much larger than the man comes at him then, a sweating abhuman ogryn, but it falls like the rest of them. Ruin stuck in the brute's chest, the sword's energy field cooking the mutant's enlarged heart with its sun-hot, coruscating discharge. He carries out the killing with clinical precision. No berserker battle cries for him, no chanting to the gods of the warp. There is no need. What he achieves with his blade is his sacrament to the powers that be, writ in the blood of those who would dare come against him. Then there is no more killing to be done, the broken ground awash with the vital fluids of the Imperial Guardsman, steaming offal, declaring the power's approval, intestines spilling from open bellies to form shapes pleasing to the true masters of the universe. He feels the boom of the great golden statue's destruction, as well as hearing it. His old eyes find the cathedral precinct, wherein once lay the place of testing, and he sees the Cyclopean effigy topple from view behind the smoky ruins of the Workahabs, with the slow inevitability of a cliff face sliding into the sea. The cheering tumult that comes after is almost as loud as the Shadow Sword volcano cannon blast that has toppled the statue.
"They would liberate this world from me, would they?" he purrs, his stony expression softening at last as a cruel smile curls his lips. "Well, let them try."
The personal transport of Devar Gargoth, Scourge of Worlds, rumbles to a halt before the broken gates that once marked the limit of an ecclesiarchal compound, but which now forms the entrance to the arena. The arena had no particular name, it needs none. It is enough that it is a place to which they are called by their dark gods, champions and their warbands by the dozen, to test themselves against the upstart emperor of this beleaguered backwater world. Gargoth emerges from his transport then, heralded by the screams of slave psychers and bound and blinded priests, as skull-faced cherubic things goad the damned with crackling agonizers. One of the black-winged cherubs detaches itself from the rest of the flock, following the packmaster with jerky, fluttering movements. The place of battle is adorned with the heraldry of scores of petty tyrants and upstart kings, whose warrior bands now swear fealty to another. Icons of blood-quenched iron loom above the packed stands of the Colosseum, alongside tattered banners of weathered human hide. 1,000 renegades, loyal to the powers and sworn to follow the lord of this world, in whose name it has been remade, watch Gargoth as he enters the arena. Some watch in cold silence, others jeering and baying, like beasts for his blood. All of them, the spoils of 100 previous gladiatorial contests. The packmaster is resplendent in his scrimshod battle plate. Even under the skies choked with the smoke of 1,000 bonfires, the bony ridges and overlapping calcified plates give him the appearance of a simulacrum of death, a golem of ancient bone. It is as if the remains of one of those funerary pyres have risen from the ash and embers to be revenged upon he who liberated the unbelievers from the shackles of their misguided dogma. In his hands, the Devar holds the chain axe, Interfector. Gargor Nor has heard it said that Devar Gorgoth had once been loyal to the false emperor, just as the lord of this world had been once, before he broke his own vows of brotherhood, along with the rest of the Calyx chapter, following the massacre of Ravenscar. Gargor Nor had not known Gorgoth then, of course. He had been recruited later, after the Calyx chapter became the Screaming Skulls, taken from his tribe during a raid on the planet he later learned was called Lithos 9, and implanted with cursed seed, said to have been procured from the apothecary errant of the Emperor's children himself in exchange for 1,000 human slaves. Gargair Nor marches out of the Rhino, along with the rest of the oppressor's elite. Their battleplate bears little resemblance to the Devar's ornate scrimshaw. Some wear the armour of conquered victims, or that scavenged during raids on worlds where mighty battles had once taken place. Others combine plate artificed by the heretic magi of the Aurasian schism with relics that perhaps date back even as far as the Dark Age of Technology. There are those who still wear pieces of the vulgar armour they once brought with them from their primitive homeworlds, but they all wear the mark of the Dvar upon their left auto-reactive shoulder guards in mockery of a practice that dates back to the days when the Screaming Skulls had still been the Kallax chapter. The mark they all wear now is the eight-pointed star with a halved human skull set at its centre. Gargair Nor surveys the serried ranks of cultists and vassal lords who have already sworn fealty to the liberator of Constantium. The effigy of a golden demigod 30 meters high, fashioned from the melted-down idols and icons of the false faith promoted by Imperial Terror, gazes down upon them all. But its burnished gaze weighs particularly heavily upon those who come to test their mettle against the master of this world. The giant's head is bowed, its hands resting upon the hilt of a mighty sword, ready to pass judgment on all who come before it. Gargair Nor had heard the rumours of what happens here. Under the giant's golden gaze, only the most worthy champions received the honour of engaging in their own trial by combat against the master of Constantium. The prize they fight for is a worthy reward indeed. The winner claims all that the vanquished possesses, his warriors, his war gear, his battle fleets, and even those worlds that pay him fealty. But Gargair Nor also knows that the master of Constantium has not lost a battle yet. Some said that the Liberator had been marked out by the powers, but then which champion of the warp had not received such a boon from the true gods of the galaxy? In the shadow of the great idol, a figure, a giant of a man, sits upon a throne of black metal and burnished gold, a cloak of snow-tusk fur draped about the broad shoulders of his ensorcelled armour. His head is bare, the lines of a dozen duelling scars visible on a face that is an alabaster echo of edifice, staring down at everything taking place within the arena. So the Liberator himself gazes down upon the oppressor and his retinue with invidious intent. The Lord of Constantium rises to his feet, and a hush descends over the bloodthirsty throng without a word being spoken. Gargair Nor cannot help but be impressed. The Liberator speaks then, his voice echoing from the shattered walls of the once cathedral. Who is it that comes seeking death and disgrace? The Dvar comes to a halt, his retinue forming up behind him, a wall of ceramite, steel, and scrimshaw. His personal arms, the skull set within the star, displayed upon the banner pole that rises from his own ornate armour, snaps in the wind, that sends eddies of dust dancing across the amphitheatre. The cherub beats the air at Gorgoth's shoulder. Gargair Nor feels the atmosphere palpably thicken about him. He has never heard a man, demigod or otherwise, speak to the packmaster like that and live a moment longer. At a nod from Dvar, the malformed crow-winged servitor flies up to the balcony where the Liberator sits and clears its throat. My lord's name is spoken of in hushed whispers on a dozen worlds. At his behest, war fleets that rival those seen during the days of the Great Uprising strike out across the stars. Civilizations fall and worlds burn at his merest displeasure. He is the ravager of 100 worlds, victor of 1,000 battles. He is Dvar Gargoth, the oppressor, flayer of worlds and packmaster of the Screaming Skulls. The Dvar thumbs the activation rune of his axe, and with a shrill shriek, the gore-stained fangs of Tyranids and Carnosaurs set within its adamantium links eat up the air. The proud words of Dvar's herald fade to wind-hushed echoes and are replaced by the hollow sound of clapping, gauntleted hands.
Proud words, the giant in red and black and gold armor says. But does Devar Gargoth, also known as Oppressor and Packmaster, not know that a warrior's not judged here upon his rhetoric, but by the strength of his sword arm?
Then I hereby issue my challenge, Gargoth roars,
silencing his herald before the thing can even attempt a response.
I challenge you, Constantius, sometime called Liberator, sometimes Oathbreaker, to a duel.
A gasp passes like a breeze through the gathered throng of cultists. Some call for the Devar's head whilst defending their lord's reputation, calling down vituperative curses upon the screaming skulls.
Fight me in single combat if you dare.
The question, Devar,
the giant in gold-chased power armor rumbles as he descends the steps from the balcony to the arena floor, one hand on the pummel of the sword sheathed in an ornately tooled scabbard at his side.
Is do you dare?
Garganor watches with interest as the giant strides across the ash and sand of the place of testing towards the packmaster. He really is a giant, but it is not just his physical stature that makes him appear enormous. It is his bearing, the way he carries himself, the air of supreme self-confidence that hangs about him like his mantle of snow-tusk fur.
But understand this, Oppressor,
Constantius the Liberator declares as he unsheaths his golden sword, the spectators within the Colosseum hanging on every word of their lord's proclamation.
To the victor, the spoils, the war host of the other.
Gargoth hefts the whirling chain axe in both hands, revving the whirling teeth with a squeeze of a bone-encrusted gauntlet as he strides forth to meet his opponent.
His men, fighting machines, unholy relics, slaves, battleships, and all worlds that are his dominion.
Enough talk, the packmaster roars.
The duelists are almost upon each other.
Shut up and fight!
So be it,
the Liberator says, and Garganor feels something he has not felt in a long time. He feels fear. He cannot tear his eyes away. His fate and that of the screaming skulls rests upon the outcome of this one battle. With that, the two champions bring their weapons to bear, axe and sword clashing, the whirling teeth of one kicking sparks from the humming blade of the other. Jean-Hans muscles bunch and tense, power armor servo motors grind in protest, face to face, eyes as hard as adamantium drill bits boring into the bone-ringed eye sockets of the packmaster's skull helm. The Liberator makes one last utterance as battle is joined.
To the death! And pray that the denizens of the warp do not make too much of a meal of devouring your damned soul.
The mass of humanity gathered around the broken steps of the great cathedral of Sirtis City looks, to Brother Maemon's mind, like a grotesque monster. Some spawn of the outer darkness, one body with a thousand gurning faces. It is a beast that has grown fat and bloated and hideous, feeding, driven by its own greed, a hunger that has become insatiable. The mob wants a change to the established order. The people want to take the place of those who were once their betters, and who are now nothing more than burning bonfires of xeno-tainted flesh. The people want to rule where once they were ruled. They want power. There is only one way to tame such a beast that Brother Maemon knows of, and that is to break its spirit, to make it fear you. Respect takes time. It must be earned, and it can be a fickle beast too. Fear, however, is instantaneous. Fear is constant. Fear can be forever, if you want it to be. The power-hungry crowd fills the plaza. The rioters, gathered now within the precinct of the great cathedral. The city has burned at their hand. Thousands have died, innocent and guilty altogether, going to their deaths side by side. Constantius stands before the beast now. He is as still as a statue, the coldly impassive expression on his face as constant as if it were cast in steel as he regards the monster. The monster he made. This world's erstwhile rulers deserved to die. They had given themselves over body and soul to the other, the unclean, the unnatural, to the alien. The sergeant had acted swiftly, cutting off the head of that gene-stealing brood before the cult's taint could become too deeply rooted within the general populace of Nova Terra. But that same populace had not seen with the same clarity of thought as the sons of Gilliman had. Enraged by the summary execution of their leaders, perpetrated by Constantius and his battle brothers, the masses had risen up in revolt. The Space Marines had freed the ungrateful horde from corruption, alien rule, and, ultimately, the insatiable appetite of the devourer of worlds, only for the throng to turn on their saviours in their thousands. Maimon knows that was the moment when everything had changed. Sons of Gilliman had died for this world, fighting to stem the alien tide in the Emperor's name, and every single one of those sons had been worth more than the entire numberless treacherous horde put together. It was said that there was one Space Marine to fight for each of the million worlds that made up the Imperium. To save mankind from the forces of the alien, heretics, and the corrupting powers of the warp. It was also said that one Space Marine for each world is enough for the task in hand. Yet 24 battle brothers of the 4th Company of the Sons of Gilliman have sacrificed themselves for this world, this Nova Terra, only for those who had remained behind to battle the Tyranid threat, unremembered and unrewarded, to now have to suffer this final dishonour. Had that been the final disgrace, the final injurious slight that had pushed Sergeant Constantius beyond the brink, it was more than any mortal man, or immortal Adeptus Astartes, should ever have to endure. If the scum of Sirtis City wanted rebellion to see their world burn, Squad Constantius would light the fire for them. But the revolt had spawned the beast, and the sergeant's actions that followed could only ever have led to one outcome. That was why Constantius and his battle brothers stand before the mob now, sons of Gilliman no longer, ready to break the beast. The sergeant will demonstrate to the mob who is the mightier, who is possessed of the stronger will, who it is that will dominate whom. There are those who had already sworn themselves to the sergeant, having seen what Constantius and his brethren have wrought within the city sectors, guardsmen who have seen their fellow soldiers die to save Nova Terra from the Tyranids, looters, rioters, the dispossessed, former servants of the Ecclesiarchy, members of the Adeptus Arbites stationed on this world. They appreciate what the sergeant and his men have done, what they have been forced to do, and why. They follow Constantius now, and even go so far as to call him Liberator. Those faithful to him are gathered about his feet. Upon the broken steps of the cathedral, their weapons, guns, knives, and anything else they have been able to lay their hands on, displayed in a crude show of might. Behind Constantius stands Maimon and his brothers, Pius and Hector, who came to this world with the sergeant and who have helped shape it beyond all recognition. They sweep the throng of humanity before them, the panting beast with bolt gun and flamer, armoured incarnations of war and wrath, vengeance and retribution. Constantius appears regal in his quartered power armour and snow-tusk cloak. In his right hand he grips the ebon hilt of his power sword, the tip of the blade resting against the fractured rockcrete at his feet. For the time being he keeps his left hand behind his back, the trophy he hides there held just as tightly in its gauntleted grasp. Then Constantius speaks, and the beast learns of the sacrifices its new master has made, how what they have lost cannot compare to what he has given up in their name, how he has forsworn all he once held true and noble and honourable, having seen the imperial truth for the lie it really is. In his very next breath, he decries the emperor and his minions, Constantius's loyal brethren echoing his words like a mantra, Maimon feeling a part of something inside himself die forever as he does so. The crowd chant and cheer in response to the sergeant's rhetoric. They are sons of the false prophet Gilliman no longer, he tells the frenzied mob, for they have been betrayed by those they once called brother. He has gazed upon the true face of the false god emperor of mankind, he tells them, and fathomed the true nature of the universe. He has torn down the false idols raised within the great cathedral. He and his fellow iconoclasts, and just as he has freed his battle brothers from the shackles of their misguided faith, so shall he liberate all the peoples of this forsaken world. It is then, and only then, that he reveals his trophy, holding it high so the gathered masses may see what he has told them is the truth and nothing less. Brother Maimon regards Antenor's severed head with cold detachment. Antenor had been disloyal. He had paid the price for that disloyalty, and rightly so, as had the rest. For that was all Constantius the Iconoclast, Constantius the Liberator, asked of any of them. All he desired was their devotion, their trust, their loyalty. The city of Syrtis burns, its avenues awash with blood and thick with rioting mobs. In the outlying districts of the industrial quarter, a firestorm consumes the Templum manufactories, where certain cult elements had made a futile last stand in a vain attempt to resist the wrath of the Emperor, meted out by his finest warriors in violent fashion. The labyrinth of the mercantile district has been purged with bolter and flamer, and tactically detonated thermic charges. Every meter has been won in hard-fought battle, but now not a single hybrid or pure-strain stealer remains alive. The purging of Syrtis City has not been without its cost. Where 10 quit Nova Terra's volcanic plateau regions, having cleansed the basalt caverns that lie there with flamer, sword and bolt gun, 8 now reconvene within a shattered plaza in the skeletal, charcoal shadows of the palaces of the nobility. It was the city's main aristocracy who were the first to face the full force of the Emperor's divine retribution, for it was they who had broken faith with him, giving themselves over to the Xenos contagion. The taint riddled the families of the planet's ruling classes, but, driven by their sergeant's righteous fervour, Squad Constantius had acted swiftly, hunting down the infected, rooting out the evil, and eradicating any sign of the cult's bloodline. Now, they are dead, all of them, and the threat the insidious alien infection posed is no more. That is where the purging of Syrtis City should have ended. If only that had been the case, Brother Antenor thinks as Squad Constantius reunites at the centre of the rubble-strewn plaza, the weapons in their hands still hot from the battle they have fought, befouled with blood and viscera and in serious need of holy cleansing and reconsecration. Antenor, with Brother Cain at his side, climbs the slope of broken rubble on the northern side of the plaza. Brother Maimon enters from the east, via a shattered colonnade, Brother Hector sweeping the ruined alcoves with his flamer. Brother Diomed and Palamedes join them, emerging from the shadows that have collected beneath a cracked Imperial Eagle. It turns out the sergeant had been waiting for them all along, hidden in plain sight beneath an ornamental archway, its stuccoed plaster facade riddled with bullet holes. A bowed and bloodied Brother Pius skulks behind him. Antenor hears the crackle of flames in the distance, as entire city sectors are consumed, along with the cries of looters and madmen running riot through the mercantile zones and once proud avenues of Syrtis City. The 8 stand together, reunited once more. But as the sergeant scrutinizes his battle brothers, Antenor feels uneasy, as if there has been a sudden drop in atmospheric pressure, or some unknowable sleeping psychic sense is trying to pass on a warning, a treacherous thought worming its way into his subconscious and worrying at his surface thoughts. Antenor cannot help thinking that they have never been less united, as if their bonds of brotherhood have never been less certain, less binding. Using his free hand, the sergeant deactivates the maglock securing his helmet to the neck ring of his power armor, removes it, and clamps it instead to his side. In the other, he still grips his power sword tightly. Constantius fixes each of them in turn with his granite-hard gaze, but when the stare, as unrelenting as an orbital bombardment, lingers on him, Antenor sees something else in the sergeant's eyes, a fire he has not seen before. The sergeant had always been possessed of an ardent righteousness, a proud desire to see that no wrongdoer goes unpunished, but this is something different. Antenor's throat feels suddenly dry. The sergeant's blood is up, that is clear, but his spirit is no longer fired by a righteous desire to see the will of the Emperor done, but by the hungry fires of untrammelled rage and thirsty bloodlust. "Well met, my sons," the sergeant says, a cruel smile on his lips. His argent and azure-quartered battleplate has become a uniform black and red, scorched by the fires he has marched through in order to see the city purged of those he has declared heretics and doused in the blood and bodily fluids of the same, which even now steam from the energized blade of his active power sword.
How goes our campaign?
It goes well, Brother Sergeant.
Brother Maimon replies with rather too much gusto for Antenor's liking.
These ungrateful heretic scum will not forget the toll their transgressions against us have exacted. Those that still live.
Excellent, excellent. I myself have purged half a dozen city sectors with fire, bolter, and sword, with Brother Pius at my side, the sergeant announces proudly.
Such is the price of treachery,
exults Pius, sounding like some pontiff quoting scripture from his mobile pulpit.
And what of the rest of you? What do you have to report? Brother Antenor, Brother Palmades, how goes your holy work?
It grieves me to hear you call what we have done here holy work, Brother Sergeant, Antenor says with a heavy heart, knowing that such words, once said, can never be unspoken.
How so?
Constantius's voice is a guttural growl, the sound made by a cornered Carnadon or an angry Grox. Because what you have decreed is against all the teachings of the Holy Codex and flies in the face of the oaths we swore when we became sons of Gilliman.
We all swore oaths of moment when we first arrived on this emperor-forsaken world, Constantius declared, his own words coming louder now and venom-edged.
And that moment lasted for 3 long years. I swear to liberate this world from the grip of the Great Devourer, as did you, Brother Antenor. As did we all. Have you forgotten that?
No, Brother Sergeant, I have not forgotten. And thanks to our tireless upholding of those oaths, that tyrannid menace has been expunged from Nova Terra.
Yes, but only to be replaced by the taint of heresy, Constantius roars. The people of this world are no better than the worms that even now feast upon the flesh of our dead brethren. Noble sons like Brother Ignatius and Brother Lucian, these whoreson wretches have no appreciation of who has saved them from a fate beyond damnation. We are the guardians of mankind, yet mankind does not deserve us. The people of Nova Terra owe us a debt that can never be repaid. But worse than that, we free them from the threat of alien tyranny and they rebel, so it is up to us to educate them, so that they understand fully the error of their ways.
We are done here, Constantius. The cult is vanquished. The last of the tyrannid broods eradicated. We should leave Nova Terra and set upon a penitent crusade in acknowledgement of our own transgressions and seek the Emperor's absolution for the crimes we have committed here in his name.
Absolution? I am absolved every time I bathe in the blood of heretics and traitors.
The sergeant snarls, not once breaking eye contact with Brother Antenor. The implication is shocking. And would you include me, one of your battle brothers, under that banner?
That depends on what you decide to do next, brother.
Never has the word brother seemed so lacking in implied brotherhood.
After all, as the Holy Codex teaches, action speaks louder than words.
So be it. Antenor says, inhaling deeply, I am a loyal son of the Primarch, and Rebute Gilliman would surely turn his face from the atrocities we have committed against the people of this world. I ask our father Primarch and the Emperor himself for forgiveness, and as a consequence, I must renounce my place within Squad Constantius.
What? The sergeant laughs. You cannot! The only way you leave my command is when our masters see fit to promote you. If our masters ever see fit to call us back to Cyclades at all, or when one of us dies.
It is with an even heavier heart that Antenor utters the next 3 doom-laden words. So be it. So be it. The expression on Constantius's face says more than words ever could.
And do you speak for you alone, or are there others here who feel as you do?
The sergeant challenges the others with his granite gaze.
Never, Maimon declares. I would follow you into the eye of terror itself, my lord.
And you might yet, Antenor warns the other.
How dare you,
Maemon roars, his bolter gun finding a new target.
No, Brother Antenor is right,
Diamond says, his tone as hard and as cold as marble.
We have broken our oaths to the chapter. We must repent and atone for our sins.
And we live or die in brotherhood, Pearson answers, quoting scripture himself now. Brother Sergeant, I pledge my bolter to your service always.
What say you, Brother Hector? Constantius growls. Where do you stand?
I stand with you, of course, Brother Sergeant. The bond of brotherhood is what makes us who we are. Without our fellow battle brothers, we are nothing.
Well said, brother, Pius proclaims. What of you, Brother Palmedes? We fought together at the walls of Baranax and against the upstart tower on Numenor 6. Where do your loyalties lie?
First and foremost, I am loyal to the Golden Throne, and then to the greatest of all his sons, Robute Gilliman, and then to my chapter. When my sergeant's commands are contrary to the credos of the greater authority, then he is my commander no longer.
Palmedes, ever the orator, has put the case as clearly as any of them.
Fine words, Constantius retorts. But what are your fine words worth when your chapter abandons you, and through no wrongdoing on your part?
We do not know that that is the case, Palmedes states plainly.
I fought long and hard to save this world from the great devourer, and then for another 3 years, unrewarded and unremembered, at my chapter's behest to save it again. I do not ask for a reward, only to be remembered. I ask for no more. I deserve nothing less.
You? The sergeant's choice of words bothers Antenor. Words have power. Such power can be all too easily abused.
We have all shed our blood for Nova Terra.
Nova Terra, the sergeant snarls.
I have shed so much blood for this world, seen so many battle brothers under my command die for this world. It would be better if it were called Constantium.
You jest, surely.
Constantium, Antenor. In honour of the fallen brothers of Squad Constantius.
Antenor scans the plaza again. The brothers have grouped together as the debate has raged, each according to the troughs they have made or the vows they have broken. Only Brother Cain, the newest recruit to join Tactical Squad Constantius, stands apart from the rest.
Brother Cain, it is time you revealed to us your heart and your mind. The sergeant says, pointing a ceramite-armoured finger at the young space marine. Come, join me.
Much as it pains me to say so, Cain replied with a faltering voice, I cannot.
You cannot?
I walked with Brother Antenor through the streets of the city as it burned and saw the evils we have perpetrated, not in the Emperor's name, but in the name of vengeance and bloody-minded obstinacy.
The last 8 sons of Gilliman, upon this strife-torn world, face each other across the fragmented square, the smoking ruins of the palace of the nobility, rising like blackened fingers, pointing to the skies in silent accusation behind the wild-eyed sergeant.
Then we have reached an impasse, brothers,
Constantius says, addressing only those who stand with him still.
The traitors have revealed their true colours. Once again we find ourselves confronted by treachery upon this hell world, treachery that must be excised like a suppurating canker.
Do not do this, Antenor warns, as Palmedes, Cain, and Diomed line up against him. If you cross this line, there will be no going back.
There has been no going back since the up moment you broke faith with your sergeant, Pius rages.
You crossed that line long ago, Constantius growls.
Traitor!
In that moment, the universe turns and nothing will ever be the same again.
Brothers! Constantius booms. The enemy has revealed itself. The traitors have broken faith with those of us dedicated to the work that is still to be completed here. So I say to you, brothers, suffer not a traitor to live.
Bolter guns are primed. Brother Hector's flamer blazes, and Constantius's blade hums with lethal power.
Sons of Gilliman! Antenor shouts,
his unwavering gaze locked upon the errant sergeant, his fingers tightening about the trigger of his own thrice-blessed bolt gun. "Remember Sirta City! Remember Nova Terra!" And with that, battle is joined. The caverns thrum with a cacophonous clamour of battle, the rattle of bolter fire, the sharp crack of frag grenades, and the alien screams of the Tyranids. Even the earth and rock cry out, shifting beneath them, protrusions cracking and crashing to the ground. Such is the savagery of the close quarters fighting, now consuming the lava tunnels. "Broodnest clear!" Brother Ignatius's voice crackles over the vox. It is only through their helm comms that any space marine of Squad Constantius can hear any other speak. The distortion is a result of the geomagnetic interference, according to Hector's Auspex scans, but it doesn't stop them doing their job. "In the Emperor's name, fire in the hole!" comes Brother Pius's voice. At his battle brother's warning, Brother Lucian drops into a crouch, one gauntleted hand upon the winged U raised from his breastplate, closing his eyes momentarily and offering up a prayer to Father Gilliman, once again asking the Primarch to watch over their endeavours as they pursue their holy mission on Nova Terra. Another seismic boom rocks the caves, shaking the crust of the planet. The torrent of flame comes moments later, licking at the greaves and shoulder guards of his blue and white battleplate, while Lucian intones the prayer of protection over and over. The fires recede and Lucian rises to his feet again, his prayer-inscribed bolter gun in hand, the vituperative words of his furious prayer still on his lips and an undying anger in his heart. Something is burning within the extinct volcano vent, something that screams in pain and fury. Dancing shadows leap and caper across the walls, backlit by the flickering flames. Pius has shaken another nest of the hibernating Xenos from their biostasis slumber. They are angry, like fire wasps, their hive disturbed by a dozy grox, and they are coming. But Lucian and his brothers are ready for them. Ridged, elongated skulls and fiercely taloned forelimbs throw leaping shades across the pitted walls of the lava tube tunnels. The retreating fires reflect from obsidian scales and in the lidless black pearl orbs of the alien eyes. Chittering and screeching, the gene stealers come at them. The four space marines form into a line of unyielding armour across the width of the magma-carved passageway. Brother Kane, like Lucian, with bolter gun in hand. Brother Pius, his bolter loose in one hand, fingering the trigger pin of a frag grenade in the other. Ignatius, the snout of his charging plasma cannon aimed at the core of the approaching brood. "In Gilliman's name, fire at will!" Lucian bellows over the screeching cries of the Xenos. The clatter of bolter fire ricochets from the basalt walls, accompanied by the crack of carapace exoskeletons being smashed open and the concussive boom of the detonating mass-reactive shells. Lucian's marksmanship is remarkable, even among the Adeptus Astartes. No shot is wasted. Bolter rounds entering through eye sockets, exploding alien hearts, and severing spinal columns. Every hit a kill shot. Pius is more measured and restrained, loosing off very deliberate shots into the throng. The gene stealers fall, lower limbs fracturing, tumbling into the path of others. Those creatures behind that don't react in time are sent sprawling. Brother Kane, the newest member of the squad, and not long out of the chapter's scout company, is nevertheless a veteran of countless battles since elements of the 4th Company came to the aid of Nova Terra. Happenstance and necessity have made him an accomplished Tyranid hunter. Then there is Brother Ignatius. He and Lucian were promoted to Squad Constantius together on the eve of the Lascar landings. While the others might look up to Lucian, seeing him as Constantius's natural successor, should the unthinkable happen, just as Lucian himself holds his sergeant in high esteem, it is Ignatius who has been afforded the honour of carrying the revered relic of the chapter into battle. With Xenos bodies creating a bottleneck within the lava tunnel, Brother Pius hurls his frag grenade into the seething, shrieking mass. In the time it takes Lucian to whisper, "The Emperor protects," the grenade detonates. A wave of concussive force flings steeler body parts at the space marines. Hooves, skull ridges, and limb pieces clattering against their besmirched battle plate. Ignatius gasps. Lucian looks. A razor-sharp shard of chitin is embedded in his right thigh.
Gilliman's bones!
Ignatius curses, checking the plasma cannon's charge. It is not yet ready. He curses again. As the smoke and dust clear, and once his helm's HUD has recovered from the shock flash of the grenade's detonation, Lucian sees the second wave of Steelers advancing along the tunnel into the kill zone. A pure strain leaps its fallen broodkin, its powerful spring carrying it clear of their guns. It lands on top of Brother Kane, its claws scouring marks in his battle plate. His bolt gun useless at close quarters, Kane lets the weapon fall to the ground, at the same time taking his combat knife from its sheath with his right hand, as his left closes around the creature's snout. Kane puts the edge of the knife to the creature's throat as the gene stealer writhes within his grasp. The first cut takes off the end of the creature's muzzle and its darting purple-black tongue. It gives a hideous wail as Kane repositions the blade and tries again. Space Marine and Gene Stealer fall to the floor. Brother Kane kicks the bucking monster from him as violent convulsive death throes take control of its body, his knife buried up to its hilt in the knot of ganglia and cerebral tissue that passes for the Stealer's brain. Lucian observes all this at the periphery of his vision as he looses off a shot that blasts out the back of another purestrain skull.
"Suffer not the unclean to live," Pius intones, "and uphold the honour of the Emperor."
It has been regularly remarked upon by the brothers of Squad Constantius that it can surely only be a matter of time before Pius is called to join the elite echelons of the chapter's chaplains. He punctuates his vituperative mantra now with bursts of fire from his bolt gun.
"Thank the Primarch," Ignatius' voice booms over the comnet.
Lucian recognizes the high-pitched hum emanating from the relic weapon in his battle brother's hands. The plasma cannon fires, and the melee is bathed in a light as intense as that at the heart of a star. Tyranids die in their droves, armoured carapaces crack, soft tissues sizzle, and alien ichor boils in the heat blast. The glow suffusing the cannon's power coils fade to a dull ultramarine. The weapon's energised plasma reserves expended again.
"Good shooting, Brother Ignatius,"
Lucian says, picking off the surviving Steelers with controlled bursts of boltifier.
"The Primarch is beneficent. None can resist the ardent fires of the Emperor's holy wrath,"
Brother Pius chips in.
"Nor the blast from a fully energized plasma cannon," adds Brother Kane.
The burning thing comes at them then. It is huge. Its chitinous carapace the same glossy black as the Steelers, its underbelly the same anemic white. Lucian is unsure whether this particular specimen is a Steeler like the others, mutated to gigantic size by the unknowable workings of alien hyper-evolution to fill a void left by the departure of the Tyranid splinter fleet 3 years before, or whether it is some other as yet unidentified xenoform. But what is clear is that it is on fire, and it is coming straight for them. It is so vast it practically fills the lava tunnel. It pounds towards them on crushing hooves, huge, scything talon arms slicing the air before it. It gives voice to a hideous shriek, a sound that seems horribly high-pitched for something so large, so monstrous. Ignatius prepares to face the monster's barreling charge with his plasma cannon, but it is still recharging after the last sunburst blast that took out the bulk of the gene-stealer brood.
"Gilliman's oaf!"
Lucian hears Ignatius cry before a burning bladed limb, more razor-sharp chitinous sword than organic appendage, descends with startling speed, leaving a smoking trail in the air behind it as it slices open the battle brother's power armor from shoulder guard to tacit. Ignatius falls, his body bifurcated. The plasma cannon hits the floor of the cavern tunnel with a dull thud. Rage boils within Brother Lucian.
"As one, as all!"
Lucian screams, turning his bolter gun on the beast. With any other Steeler, every discharged bolt round would have been a kill shot. Against this brute beast, the mass-reactive shells detonated against chitinous hide, leaving nothing more than lunar crater pockmarks on the surface of its obsidian armour.
"Gilliman's teeth!"
Pius rails against the hideous truth they are all confronted with now. Another malformed limb lashes out, this one like some lumpen chitinous wrecking ball, trailing smoke and plasma flames. The force of the impact launches Lucian back against the passageway, his head hitting the curved basalt wall hard. His helmet absorbs the worst of the blow, but his vision blurs for a moment nonetheless. In that moment, he sees a figure in blue and white, its gleaming armour underlit, a ruby orange, bound up the monster's back, the coruscating power sword in its hand flashing out as the armoured figure vaults over the tyrant's head, the humming blade singing as it slices through chitin, ligaments, bone and oesophageal tubes. The somersaulted figure, a cloak of snow tusk spread out behind it, lands on the floor of the tunnel, the basalt cracking under the avenging angel's ceramite boots. A moment later, the tyranny's head hits the floor in a welter of oozing ichor. The overgrown brood beast continues to claw the air, one spasming strike dealing Pius a grievous wound even through his chestplate. Then the carcass topples to the ground as well. The yellow-white pus that passes for the creature's blood pumping from its severed neck. The persistent plasma fires fading at last. The decapitated body still twitching with muscle spasms for several seconds afterwards. Sergeant Constantius rises to his full impressive height, the cloak settling behind him. He regards Brother Lucian, Pius, Cain, and the savagely slaughtered Ignatius, the faceplate of his helm betraying no emotion. "Brother Sergeant!" Lucian exclaims in unalloyed delight, shaking his head clear and getting to his feet again. "Thank the Primarch!"
"Well met, Brother Lucian."
The survivors of the assault gather around their sergeant like delighted children at the arrival of a favourite uncle. "Brother Pius, Brother Cain."
"Brother Ignatius," Lucius begins,
"will be remembered, and his name added to the roll of the honoured dead who have given their lives for this world, for a great many of the hated Xenos met their end at his hands, unable to match his might or vengeful wrath."
The remainder of Squad Constantius join them then, following Constantius up from the deeper tunnels.
"Brother Hector," the sergeant says,
addressing another of the warriors joining them now, and who is holding his left hand with care. Lucian can see savage bite marks in the ceramite gauntlet.
"What says your Auspex's machine spirit?"
The Space Marine consults the scanner held in his other hand. It is a moment before he answers.
"The caves are clear, Sergeant Constantius."
"You are sure?"
"Yes, Brother Sergeant. I have recalibrated and rescanned twice to be certain."
"Then the Emperor be praised. Our work here is done."
The sense of relief and joy is palpable.
"Let us take up the body of our fallen battle brother and return to the Arden Fire, that we may preserve his gene seed and signal our chapter that Nova Terra is free of the Xenos at last."
"Brother Sergeant," Brother Palmades interrupts, "I have been monitoring a number of Adeptus Arbites transmissions over the Imperial Voxnet. The signal is degraded, but the implication, I believe, is clear."
"What is it, brother?" asks the sergeant. "What are you trying to tell us?"
"The nests in these volcano plateaus were not the only place where the Steeler broods went to ground after the Splinter Fleet was repelled from the shores of Nova Terra."
The atmosphere of joy in the air evaporates in an instant.
"Brother,"
Constantius says, his voice a sinister guttural growl,
"be clear. What are you trying to tell us? Do you speak of..."
He hesitated.
"Cult activity."
"I fear so, Brother Sergeant," Palmades confirms, his remorseless tone giving the impression that he is confessing to some terrible transgression of his own.
"Then this world is not yet free of its Xenos taint," Sergeant Constantius says darkly, "and our work here is not yet done."
Suddenly, raising his power sword high, he makes a new oath of moment in a voice that booms like an orbital assault.
"I shall not rest until this world is free."
Twisting his wrist, Faucard brings the chainsword back around, the jagged adamantium teeth quickly chewing through the neck of another maniacal cultist.
but where one blasphemer falls beneath the shattered vault of the great cathedral of Sirtis City, there are a dozen more ready to take its place. Many of the deranged devotees come at them, armed with nothing more than dull-edged knives and the insane belief that somehow they have a hope of prevailing against the Iron Knights. The cultists possess little in the way of armour either, or even clothing of any sort. Their filthy robes hang like rags about them. What little flesh that clothes their near-skeletal frames is covered with all manner of blasphemous symbols. Some have been tattooed on, some are unhealed scars, cut with the point of a knife or a jagged fingernail. The glyphs make even Focard sick to the pit of his stomach if he looks upon them for too long. The flagellants scream blasphemies to their unspeakable masters as they come at the Space Marines, wave after rushing wave of them, but the armour of their unshakable, unholy faith does nothing to save them from Focard's blade or the Emperor-inspired wrath of his brother knights. From out of the pack emerges a bald man, flayed skin peeled back from the top of his head to expose the glistening skull beneath, the blood-red bone incised with the star rune of the arch-enemy. Focard plunges his sword into the man's stomach. The cultist gasps. The foul invocation that was on his lips cut off in that instant, but the wildness in the man's stare remains, while a delighted, shark-like smile twists his face into a grotesque grimace. The cultist grabs hold of the chainsword and gives a sharp tug. Dark blood gushes from his mouth as the man convulses and pulls himself up the blade, now with only the hilt protruding from his belly. The fanatic reaches up to claw at Focard's helmet with broken, bloodied fingernails, the same insane smile still etched on his face. The Iron Knight raises his bolt pistol and explodes the lunatic's skull with a single round, shaking the limp corpse from his chainblade. He turns to meet the charge of the next insane idiot, desirous of a hasty death. Not 5 meters away, Brother Adnot takes a cultist's head in his hands and wrenches it from the woman's shoulders. The arterial spray of blood that follows sends a shower of red mist down upon the gunmetal grey battle plate, the blasphemer's unholy blood baptizing them all. There is a flash of steel to Faucard's right, and Brother Nahil takes down a mewling, conjoined thing with one stroke of his treasured relic blade. Brother Urs gives a bestial bellow and barrels past the huge space marine, crashing into the cultist pack, sending the suicidal servants of the ruinous powers tumbling to the ground, crushing their skulls under his armoured feet. Another burst of bolter fire and another body performs its own dance macabre before falling to the ground suddenly, eerily still. Then there is no more killing to be done, and the broken ground is awash with the blood of the blasphemers. Sergeant Focard regards the twisted, pulverized and bludgeoned bodies for a moment, finding himself wondering once again how anyone could choose such a life and such a death, bodies daubed with unholy sigils, flesh already rotting, minds and souls sick with corruption, over a life of service to the Emperor and the Imperium. He doesn't know, what's worse, that such weak-minded mortals can sink to such levels of depravity, or that the thing that they revere as a lord of this world was once like the sergeant and those battle brothers under his command, one of the Emperor's finest, an inheritor of the genetic legacy of the highly revered Primarch Gilliman, a loyal space marine. The so-called Liberator must have known as soon as he broke faith with his vows of brotherhood, turned his back on his devotion to the Emperor, and renounced the sacred trust that had been placed in him by his chapter master, that this day would come. "Brothers!" Focard announces, the squad gathering together again, forming a ring around their sergeant. "Let us swear an oath of moment to reaffirm the vows we made on coming to this hell world, that we shall not rest until the traitor's head adorns the battlements of his own citadel. Swear it now." "We swear it," the Iron Knights bellow in furious affirmation of their sergeant's words. "The iconoclast's blasphemous idol has been toppled, and after 13 long years of fighting, his forces are en route. Now this once great cathedral has been purged of his profane acolytes too. It is now only a matter of time before the Emperor guides us to the place where we shall meet with the arch-traitor himself in battle. With his death, we shall reclaim this world for the Emperor. This I so swear." The knights Antiphonal response reverberates from broken pillars of the once mighty edifice, like the roar of a Thunderhawk's engines.
So we all swear.
Vigilance, valour, vengeance,
Falcard roars, his brethren quick to echo the battle cry of their chapter.
Let us be ever watchful for signs of treachery, and be ruthless in our prosecution of those who would willingly turn from the Emperor's light, as we exact his divine retribution upon them.
Falcard thrust his sword high into the sky then, its tip appearing to scrape the hellstorm clouds of blood and smoke that shroud the ruined city.
For I shall not rest until this world is liberated from the traitor's tyrannical rule. This I swear.
A case in point is the dark tale of Constantius, sometimes called the Oathbreaker, sometimes called the Iconoclast, renegade battle brother of the noble sons of Gilliman. Having renamed the world Constantium, the renegade sergeant plunged his newly conquered domain into an age of anarchy, darkness, and blood sacrifice. Not content with having consecrated one world to the ruinous powers, the traitor embarked upon a campaign of savage slaughter, a terrifying pogrom that engulfed planet after planet, system after system, until within the space of 10 short years, the entire Veridus sector owed him fealty. It took a unified force of 3 Space Marine chapters, 12 Imperial Guard foundings, an entire battle fleet, and agents of both the Officio Assassinorum and the mighty Ordo Hereticus to finally recapture the planet. Even then, the bloodshed only ended with the death of the traitor Constantius himself. Even now, some 300 years after the end of his tyrannical reign, it is said that cult gangs of rebels still hold out in the volcanic plateaus, having made their lair within the labyrinthian lava tunnels found in that region. It is from these hidden cave systems that the rebels carry out guerrilla raids against the emperor-faring folk of Nova Terra. It is within these haunted caverns that they continue to make sacrifices to their blasphemous gods in the name of Constantius the Liberator, a name that will forever be a stain upon the reputation of the noble sons of Gilliman. From the treatise Quis Custodet Ipsus Angelus Mortes by Gideon Law, Inquisitor, Ordo Hereticus. Thanks for watching, everybody. Please do remember to give this video a like and subscribe if you're not subscribed, and let me know in the comments below what you thought. If you are subscribed, remember to hit the bell so that you get notified when I do stuff. Other than that, if you'd like to share this with anyone, you think anyone you know would enjoy this, please feel free to do that. That really helps. Otherwise, I will see you next time. This story was nice. I enjoyed it, but the author, for some reason, just slipping in words that are completely unnecessary. I mean, vituperative. I've never heard that word in my life. I had to literally look it up. It just means bitter and abusive. Other than that, good story. Nice take on things. I'll see you next time. Again, if you'd like to support the channel, please use the links below. But yeah, I'll see you later. Cheers.